Gut, also herzlich willkommen allerseits hier an den Chemnitzer Linux-Tagen 2013. Wir sind eine kleine Gruppe heute, obwohl das Thema natürlich hoch brisant ist mit allem. Und ich möchte gleich den ersten Vortragenden hier recht herzlich begrüßen, Alexander Graf, der uns über ARM auf, ARM auf Linux, SUSE Linux und ARM. Zwei Welten, wo ich denke, die passen nicht wirklich zusammen, aber anscheinend doch. Okay, herzlich willkommen und vielen Dank.
Danke, danke. So, first things first, is there anyone here who doesn't know German? All right, great. Non-German wins. So we're going to do this one in English, sorry. So you can see there's a chameleon on their arm. So about me, I'm Alexander Graf. I work for SUSE. And traditionally, I'm actually more of a virtualization guy. I do QEMU development, I do KVM development, and I'm just going to do all this ARM stuff by accident, because coincidentally, ARM devices used to be really slow, so they had to be emulated, which again means that's where I come into play. But by now, we're actually running native as well, so this is not only about emulation of ARM. So let's talk about ARM. What is ARM? Who of you does not own an ARM device? Very good, because everybody does. This, for example, is an ARM device. This is not an ARM device that usually would be running OpenSUSE, but it's an ARM device. That one doesn't even have an AMU. It's a Cortex-M0. It's just like in your temperature control or in any random really small embedded things. We don't care about those, but that's ARM. This is an ARM device pretty much everybody knows, I guess. It's the Raspberry Pi. It's really popular. it's actually a pretty old chip, but it's become so popular because it's just dirt cheap, and everybody can afford it. This also is an ARM device. That one is even more powerful than the one before. Galaxy Nexus 7 is just an example for tablets. Pretty much every tablet you can buy these days, except for the Microsoft ones, and even the and some, are ARM-based. Now we're getting even more powerful, an ARMdale board. Anybody ever seen one of those? Okay. These are the first Cortex A15 boards that are broadly available. So that's mostly interesting for me because they're the first boards that can run KVM. This is the same chip, so I'm going to roam this notebook a bit around. So you guys can just type on it if you like. Please don't crash it. It's the Google Chromebook. So by now, you can even buy ARM devices that are in just normal desktop flavors. This has got nothing to do with embedded. This is really just your traditional normal notebook in a Google flavor this time. But there's no reason nobody could just build a notebook based on ARM chips today that would just look as if it wasn't just a normal notebook. And that's the one that's even more interesting to me. This is a Exceda box. This one specifically is an HP machine. There are some other vendors that also sell these chips in their own boxes, like Boston. This is your traditional server. It's got IPMI. You can remote control, power on, cycle it. It got SATA on it. Each board has its own SATA connector. Each of those cards is actually four chips with four cores each. So you get 16 cores inside of one of those cards. These machines are pretty powerful. You can actually do a lot of them, a lot with them. And they're really power efficient on what you can actually crunch on them. So what is ARM really? ARM is essentially everywhere. As you've seen, wherever you look at the spectrum, yes, even above you. Wherever you look at the spectrum, there's an ARM device there somewhere. You got notebooks, you got your small embedded devices. I'm pretty sure this telephone is running some ARM device. There's ARM devices everywhere. Even in this notebook, there are ARM devices as well. Like my Wi-Fi chip, for example, probably is based on ARM. But these days, we are finally getting to a point where ARM devices are powerful enough for your CPU-type workloads. And that's where OpenSUSE comes into play, because OpenSUSE is awesome on desktops and on servers. I gotta say that. Sorry, it's just I'm using OpenSUSE, so I need to be in favor of it. And since we do have desktops and servers now on ARM, we definitely need to have OpenSUSE on ARM. Anybody disagreeing? Awesome. So these are the devices we really care about in OpenSUSE. We don't traditionally have a big user base for embedded workloads. We don't have a CAN bus, for example, usually on our devices. So that's, you don't have OpenSUSE steering your car. It's just not what usually people use OpenSUSE for. So let's take a look at where we are. Most of these slides are based on 12.2, because in the ARM world, we're slightly slower than x86. So we're lagging behind the breeze as well. 12.3 just got released, as you probably realized. So 12.2 got released for ARM in November. This is not too long ago, about a half a year. It's ARM v7 only. We don't have any release for anything else than ARM v7. Who knows what ARM v7 means? All right. There are different revisions of ARM cores and ARM ISA specifications. The most recent one that got released is ARM v7. It's basically this notebook, wherever it is now. Somebody probably stole it. This notebook is based on ARM it's an ARM v7 capable machine. Most of the powerful boards and chips you can buy are ARM v7. Your phone most likely is ARM v7 as well. The Raspberry Pi is ARM v6. Most NASs are ARM v5. It's really just a revision. V stands for version. There are, again, different cores that ARM provides based on different versions. So in Cortex A15 is ARM v7, Cortex A9 is ARM v7, Cortex A8 is ARM v7. Everything that's not called Cortex is something older. ARM 11 is ARM v6, ARM 9 is ARM v5. And, ARCH64 is ARM v8. If you're confused, everybody is. That's why we're only targeting ARM v7 right now, because we don't understand all of that either. So 12.2 is a Goldmaster release only. We don't do updates. That's mostly to do with the fact that we basically started the port after 12.2 got frozen. We didn't start it, but we only got to a reasonable point after the port got frozen. So we did not get into the main code stream of 12.2. So we are not in the update channel for 12.2 either, so we don't get updates. So if you download 12.2, it's the image you get, and there's no security fixes on there. These are examples for devices that run on OpenSUSE 12.2, or actually 12.2 runs on. That's a BeagleBoard on your left. It's an OMAP3 processor, a Cortex A8. And on the right is a PandaBoard. That's a Cortex A9. These are reasonably old boards, both built by TI. Coincidentally, TI recently let go of most of their division that actually produced these chips. But they are the best supported boards upstream so far, so that's why we are supporting them. So we can actually use an upstream kernel with them. So in OpenSUSE 12.2, we have device support for the BeagleBoard, for the PandaBoard, and for the Versatile Express board. That's ARM's own development board. So if you work for ARM, you probably have one of those. We also provide something really cool that's a root file system for your own kernel. So if you don't want to use our kernels, you can just download the tarball, throw it on your device, and it works. I'll get to that later. Let's take a look at booting. Why do we have to actually care about device support? So just to get all your minds into how ARM is different, let's take a look at x86 booting. How does a machine boot on x86? You get your firmware, your system boots up, like a BIOS or UEFI firmware. The firmware loads a bootloader. And then the bootloader goes in and loads a kernel. And the kernel can execute user space. So there you go. Pretty easy chain. You just roll in, you build one bootloader, you build one kernel, you build one user space, and everybody's happy. Now let's take a look at ARM booting. On ARM, you traditionally don't have any firmware on your devices. You actually have to deliver them yourselves, almost. There's some really small micro firmware blob in there that at least gives you access to, traditionally, your RAM. And that's pretty much it. So you can't actually do anything with that firmware. You can't load a bootloader. So you actually have to provide something that does both. That is your bootloader and that is your firmware as well, usually an ARM that's U-boot. So now you have a bootloader. And that bootloader then can load a kernel again and can load user space. Well, if only things were that simple. Because we have our firmware actually tied to our machine now, well, the firmware needs to know what devices there are in your system. And because our bootloader is our firmware, the bootloader actually needs to be built specifically for each board. So we don't only have a single bootloader, we have a dozen of bootloaders. For each board, there's a single specific bootloader that actually knows what hardware there is inside of your board because the bootloader is your firmware. It's getting better, yes. It's just on the bootloader side, actually pretty bad still. There was a question, how do you put this on the board? On most development boards, you just provide UBoot on your SD card, and there's this really small blob, mini ROM in your chip that can at least load your bootloader from the SD card. But that's it. The firmware, the bootloader is the firmware. I would not consider the ROM that runs as actual firmware because it doesn't have any interfaces that you can use. It really just is a loader. And the initial loader, that one speaks SD usually. It can also speak eMMC and whatever. So because of all this mess that you have a dozen different bootloaders, people in the kernel world figured, well, it's a really good idea to make our kernel only built for a single machine as well. So now we have a kernel that is only built for a single machine. So we again have a dozen kernels. At least user space doesn't suffer this issue. It does have some issues there, but user space can mostly be just easily copied over to any other machine and just work, at least as long as we're in the ARMv7 world. So does anybody see that this is creating problems? Yes, no? It's a nightmare, really. So that's the reason we created the Contrib project. So OpenSUSE basically says, we can only do upstream code. We're not going to do downstream forks of your kernel. We're not going to do downstream forks of UBoot. If you want to create crappy code, go and do it on yourself, but we're not going to support it. So because in the ARM world, most boards are embedded devices. Embedded developers want to create crappy code and don't want to upstream it. That ends up being a pretty contradictory thing. So we need to somehow enable all those downstream forks, all the downstream kernels, downstream UBoots, to actually work, compile, and run on for OpenSUSE. How do we do this? So we have these bits. We have UBoot, we have the downstream kernel, and we have user space, which is basically the whole of the distribution. The distribution is mostly just packages and programs you run. The kernel is a really small, tiny part of it. So if you take these three parts and basically take them from different locations, so you take your UBoot from your software development kit, your board enablement package, how you want your vendor calls it. Sometimes they call it BSP, sometimes they call it SDK. If you just take it from whatever your board vendor gives you, you take the kernel from whatever your board vendor gives you, if it's recent enough, and you take our root tarball that I mentioned earlier, and you just throw all of them on your SD card in a way that the vendor actually expects them to be laid on your SD card, because that also differs very vastly between different boards, then you can boot up OpenSUSE on your board. Easy, huh? So we're done, right? Nothing else to do. Well, it's not quite as simple, because who seriously wants to go through this tedious process if they just want to get their board running on OpenSUSE? I mean, I don't want to do that, at least. I don't want to have to, I don't know, execute like 50 different commands just to and compile my own kernels just to get my board running on OpenSUSE. So what do we do? Well, there's this really cool thing called the OpenSUSE build service. And that is essentially a build service. It builds packages for you. So what you can do is we take the downstream UBoot, we take the downstream kernel, because the GPL code usually, we can do that, and just throw them in a special project called Contrib for your board. Then we also add a Kiwi description. Whoever used Kiwi here? ex-SUSE employees, yes? Okay. Kiwi is our image creation toolkit. It's basically a really big pile of Perl code that creates an image from an XML image description. So you throw in an XML image description and a few repositories, and it goes ahead and creates an image for you that you can just dump on whatever you like. It's used for creating ISOs, creating OE images. If you ever use SUSE Studio, that's the backend to it. Kiwi is basically what creates images in the open SUSE world, on the SUSE world in general. I think by now it can even create Red Hat images, not sure. So that image you can then take and dump on your SD card. And because you create the repository, Kiwi actually can take the kernel and U-boot from your specific system and put it into the image. And you also provide a script that tells Kiwi what to do to install the U-boot onto your SD card layout. If you don't know what it means, don't worry. Then the SD card image basically can easily be dumped on onto your card. And it resizes automatically to whatever your SD card is actually, whatever the size of your SD card is. So that means you just take the image, dump it onto your card, and there you go. You've got a working image. So that's really a lot easier to use. People who just want to get their board, their system up and running, can simply download an image that just works and get going with OpenSUSE, because usually people don't want to compile kernels. So if you have a board and you care about that board, you can do this. You can create a contrib project, and more people will use your board, at least with OpenSUSE. So what platforms do we support? This is all Trev2 still, because, again, we're lagging behind. So the upstream part, that's really just BeagleBoard, PandaBoard, and Versatile Express. It's a pretty limited scope. So because almost nobody has one of those devices, we figured we should probably go ahead and add a few contribs ourselves and ask others to do the same. So what we have as contrib today is an IMX53. That's a Freescale chip. And that's actually a pretty funny story. I got one of those boards for free at the Embedded World Trade Fair because I ran a raffle at the Microsoft booth. So the first thing I did was I created a contrib for OpenSUSE on it. I never even ran Windows CE on this thing. So it works pretty well, IMX53. I did ask Hannes to bring all those with me, but I don't think he did. So, HiBank, that's one of the employees from Caxida. So if you have any questions on HiBank, that's your person. The next talk is actually about the HiBank CPUs. The Origin board is the predecessor to the Arndale board that I showed you earlier. Tegra is basically non-functional today because nobody really maintains that contrib project. But it would work with your code, with Lucas code, for example. Qbox, we have a Qbox port. Qbox is a really small, tiny black box, maybe 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters, a bit more, maybe 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters, I don't know. Like it's a cube, a really small cube that is essentially a full server in a small box. The Chromebook, you just saw the Chromebook. Arndale board is supported as well. We have a few contribs already. So let's take a look at a specific contrib, the Arndale. That's the one I did most recently, so it's the best to show. The Arndale contrib really looks very simple. This is the web UI to the OpenSUSE build service. And in there, you can see that on the left, these are the packages that we provide in our contrib. Everything else gets taken from the OpenSUSE 12.2 repository. So this is the only thing we actually care about for our board. In there, we have our descriptions, our JUICE and XFCE descriptions. These are the Kiwi image descriptions that basically tell Kiwi how to create an image for the specific board. Then we have the kernel source code for the board. On the Arndale board only got upstream in 3.9, and even there it's broken. I just sent a couple patches out. So we actually have to take a downstream kernel here as well, especially because this kernel actually enables you to run KVM on this one. And we also have our U-boot here that, again, is a specific patched version of U-boot that also enables you to run KVM on your Arndale board. So these are the bits that you actually care about to enable a specific board, a board that is not just already there. So with these few bits, with the kernel, the bootloader, the special image description, and, well, our specific QMU that, again, enables you to run KVM on the Arndale board, we have an OpenSUSE 12.2 remix for the Arndale. That's it. Easy as that. It's really just a matter of throwing 5 packages into the build service, waiting until it's done, and there you go, you can download an image and run it on your board. So once the build server is finally finished building your packages, which hopefully will get faster soon, you will be able to download it from downloadopensuse.org and then a long URL that the build server actually tells you when you ask it to. And there you can download images. You can see the juice description, that's the top one, created a war.exe file, and the XFCE description created the XFCE war.exe file. So out of those 2 image descriptions, fell 1 image each. So Conjurib is an easy way to port OpenSUSE to your device. If you have, I guess there's no real device platform specialists over here, but if you create your own ARM device and you want to have that enabled in OpenSUSE, it's really easy to do. If you just want to be a good community citizen and you have an ARM device and you really want to have it supported, you're more than welcome to join us as well. No, it's the same mechanism. Oh, the question was if there's any issue if the device is not on v7. No, there's no issue at all. All the mechanisms work exactly the same on v7 and v5 and anything else we enable. It's really just a matter of the repository you're linking against. We'll get to that. The cool thing is you don't have to touch generic parts. So if you have a device and you want to enable 3D for your device, all you have to do is you have to throw in your source code, because you're not allowed to put binary blobs into the build service, but your source code for your graphics driver into the build service and create a new image, and there you go, you even have graphics on your ARM device. It's really, you only have to worry about the parts that are not the distribution, not the kernel, you have to worry about the kernel. You don't have to worry about X working, about Vim, about Emacs, about, you know, that all the fundamental packages actually work. And the cool thing is that Conjurib lives in an almost official namespace, so you can show it to your friends and show off and tell them, hey, like, guys, look, this is like an official OpenSUSE port. Almost. So what about 12.3? 12.3 just got released last week. So yes, we are building OpenSUSE for ARM in 12.3. We are actually even building it as part of a normal distribution. Unfortunately, our build hardware was not as stable as we expected it to be. So it didn't finish by the time 12.3 froze. And well, we're trying to catch up, essentially. So we're working on a release, trying to figure out, trying to squash the last few bugs in the official images. And then after that, Conjurib is moving on. And we're probably going to open Conjurib for people who want to add their own board support and create a few board support pieces as well ourselves. So this is the status, again, the OpenSUSE build service UI, web UI. This is where we are at with OpenSUSE on ARM v7. Over here, you can see we built most of the packages. Actually, we built all of the packages that we could build, because by now we've finished building. And we already have images available as well that so far only a single person on this planet tested. So if you would like to help out, go ahead and test images, please. We have 12.3 as the first release, actually, of OpenSUSE, where all our ARM patches that we did for 12.2 got merged back into the main OpenSUSE tree. So we didn't have any modifications for 12.3 that were ARM-specific in an ARM-specific branch. This is really just stock OpenSUSE build against ARM, period. Which doesn't sound like a great achievement, it is. You don't have to maintain specific patches for ARM, which is really just tedious, annoying. Most packages work. We have a few failed builds. We have a few unresolvable builds. Unresolvable means there's some package that has a build requirement that we cannot fulfill, either because the package that it needs to build failed, or because the package that it needs to build wouldn't even build on ARM. Those need to be fixed as well, but they're really not too much of an issue because we're talking about 3% of the distribution. It's really not that much. So, building ARMs. How do you build? We have in the OpenSUSE build server, we have things we called workers. Workers are machines that get build jobs and basically create packages out of source code. So from the build service, there's a description and source code on how to build a package and the sources for that package. That one gets over into the worker, and the worker builds it. Now, what if there is, I've already screwed up those slides. What if there's a bug in that description or in the source code? What if there's malicious code in that source code that tries to break out and create really bad source code or really bad binary code that is signed with the OpenSUSE key to get installed on your system? So if that gets to the worker, we really don't want to execute this malicious code period. So what we do is we jail it in. We basically build inside a virtual machine. You probably know what a virtual machine is, right? So we build it inside a virtual machine so that if there's really bad code in there that wants to break free, it can't because it's contained inside of a virtual machine. That VM usually in the build service is KVM. Now, what do we do on ARM? Because ARM hardware as it is today, except for the Chromebook and the Arnde board, cannot run KVM. In fact, they can't run anything at all. There's no virtualization on them, really. There used to be a Zen port for some specific chips that Samsung, I think, cared about back 5 years ago. So that one's out of the question. Elgas, there was an Elgas port for the Beagle board, I think, and that's it. So Elgas can't be used either. That's another virtualization technology. There really is no hypervisor that you can just easily use on ARM systems. So Anu was just saying that there was an A9 based PV port or a PV KVM port for A9. Yes, there used to be a port. Actually, there wasn't Taiwan, but University of Columbia, there was Christopher. And the person who did that is now working on the A15, so on the Arndale and Chromebook KVM, and completely abandoned that old project. So that is not an alternative either. It's pretty crappy code. It doesn't do SMP. It's essentially not useful for us. So in order to actually build, we usually would have, that's the would have, we usually would have ARM hardware on top of that one in KVM, and on top of that one the ARM build job. Now, we don't have KVM and ARM, so what do we do? Well, the idea we came up was, let's just add another layer of abstraction. So we used x86 hardware, had KVM running on there, emulated ARM, and then had that emulator run the ARM build job. Turns out that actually works pretty well. And depending on the ARM chip you want to build against, it's even faster than running ARM natively. So we actually built OpenSUSE 12.2 completely using that approach. Not 100%. We actually added a lot of hacks to, instead of emulating GCC, we actually ran a native cross-compiler inside of our change root. There were a lot of really dirty, nice hacks inside that build process, and we actually got to about 70% of the build performance of an x86 build. So we were actually building really fast. However, recently we got our first Cortex A15 worker installed. Yay! So we can finally build KVM builds if only the boards were stable. So again, we're having built hardware issues, and hopefully we'll soon have working KVM on Cortex A15 boards, which are fast, so that we'll be able to run native builds and provide native builds for everybody, and then the world will be happy. 12.3, however, we actually already built on ARM. We have a pile of Panda boards that we just put down in our server room and told them to just build the OpenSUSE distribution, at least, in a really unsecure manner. They basically use a change root. However, because we trust our OpenSUSE community, that one is OK. We just don't trust everybody else. So what's missing now? Well, we're missing an ARMv5 release, and we're missing AI64. ARMv5, as I mentioned earlier, is an older revision of the ARM specification, and we really would need that build to enable the Raspberry Pi. So today, as it stands now, we cannot run our ARMv7 code on the Raspberry Pi because the Raspberry Pi is ARMv6. However, ARMv6 is compatible with ARMv5. So with an ARMv5 port, we could run our code on ARMv6. With an ARMv5 port, we could run on the Raspberry Pi. Now, we already did build an ARMv5 port. Ever since we started doing the ARM port, there was always an ARMv5 port running, building in the background. Everything was there. Just that nobody really went ahead and made a real distribution out of that, fixed all the build issues that actually got raised, ended up creating a product description for it. There are a bunch of maintenance things you have to do to actually get a new distribution port working. And so far, there just has not been anybody who wanted to, go through this tedious work. However, Cypher just recently, this morning, told me that he wants to take up that position, so I'm more than happy to hopefully soon have an ARMv5 port. Or an ARMv6 port, that's perfectly fine with me as well. AI64 is a completely new architecture. Who heard of it? Yay, even more hands, awesome. That's the next big thing. So now ARM is going into real servers, not just 32-bit crap that we have today, real 64-bit servers. However, there's no hardware yet. And it's a completely new instruction set. So it's not like ARMv5 and ARMv7 that you can just run, basically you could, in the same environment, run ARMv5 binaries and ARMv7 binaries almost in parallel. That just doesn't work because the CPU has to be switched completely in modes to enable ARMv8 AI64. However, we managed to still bootstrap OpenSUSE on there. So by now, we have OpenSUSE for a non-existing architecture that only works in emulators. So we can verify that it works in an emulator. And we build almost all of the distribution for it. So it's 4,600 packages. Just to put that in comparison, Red Hat is at about 100 by now. So we're pretty far ahead there. We did this by enabling the foundation model in the build script. So the foundation model is the official ARM emulator for this architecture. And because one of the people in the ARM team actually is the maintainer for the OpenSUSE build service, or the open build service, the whole project in general, he just added support for it in the script that executes our virtual machines, usually our KVM instances on the server. And instead of running a KVM VM, he just ran an emulator VM in the foundation model, and there you go. We just throw 200 virtual machines at the problem and build a lot of packages. Of course, there were more issues than just throwing build power at it, but that was a pretty big one. Most packages actually built by now, you saw that just, one just now, 4,600 out of 5,000 something packages. We're missing Java and Mono. We can probably get away without Mono. We can probably not get away without Java. There are quite a. The rest, the other 1,000 roughly packages that we're missing are mostly depending on Java stuff. So we need to build Java first to get further. And that is not easy because to build Java 1.7, you need Java 1.6. And to build Java 1.6, you need Java 1.5. And Java 1.5 is compatible, GCJ, the GNU compiler, is compatible with Java 1.5, but not completely. So you need to have special bootstrap packages for 1.5 with GCJ. I'm not going to get into the details. It's horrible. So getting Java working is probably going to be another 2 months or so. But over here at the URL, you can actually look at the status, see a nice screenshot, see instructions on how to get the emulator, how to get it rolling with an OpenSUSE image. We even provide an image that you can just run an emulator. And then you too can claim that you run the awesome brand new fast architecture in a really slow emulator. Cool, huh? That's a screenshot you're going to see. You can boot up to a prompt, you can log in, you can do all your nice things you want to do on another distribution. if you're Samsung, you probably would like this. No, we don't have an FPGA. But the FPGA, well, the question was, do we have the FPGA? No, we don't have an FPGA. And the FPGA is even slower, from what I heard, than the emulator. So it's not going to help here. So how can you help? Because you're in this room, you probably want to, I assume that you do want to help. You can help by testing images. That's really one thing that we are seriously lacking time for. We cannot guarantee that every image we build actually works on the hardware that we hope it would build for. We can verify some images, but we can't just spend one day every week trying to go through all of the current images and make sure that they still work on all the boards. Emulating hardware is a really big one. If you have a board and you or a machine, or like say a Chromebook or a development board or something, and you really want to get this working, just go contact me or anybody else on the OpenSUSE ARM mailing list, and let's try to get boards working. The more hardware we enable, the more users we have for OpenSUSE ARM. Fixing build failures, you can try and tackle the 1% that's left. I can assure you those are not the easy 1%. Writing wiki pages is really important. We are really crap at writing documentation. We developers, we don't write documentation. Our documentation is the code, so we really need somebody else to do that for us. Well, just register on mailing list, join us on OpenSUSE ARM and Freenode. Get into the game of discussing things. If you're a packager, who of your packages on the OpenSUSE build service? Considering the number of ARMs I've seen raised when I talked about the build service in general, I would assume it's about zero. But okay. So we don't have packages here. If you were a packager, the OBS fully supports ARM. So if you just have a repository that you want to have enabled for ARM, all you have to do is you have to add ARM to your project configuration, which is basically, well, let me show you. Using the awesome OSC command, the OpenSUSE command, command client thing. I have no idea what the abbreviation means, but using that command, you can modify the project configuration for your project. Like, say, one project I maintain is the virtualization project, where we build QMU, where we build KVM. Well, we don't build KVM. We build QMU, where you build VirtualBox, we build a couple of other packages. So in there, I enabled OpenSUSE for ARM building so that we can see when my new QMU check-in actually broke the ARM build. So that before I submit that package to factory, I know that I actually would have broken ARM. So using this snippet, you can just enable ARM builds on your... Actually, the one's deprecated by now. If you want to do this, let me know. Using the snippet, you can run ARM builds automatically in the build service against your project. So whenever you add a new source code, it automatically gets built against ARM as well. So if you have a package, if you are a project maintainer, package maintainer, if you're probably not, but if you are, check if your build works on ARM. If it does, awesome. Ask for help. And you can even build locally on the x86 box, because we enabled all those cross-emulation builds, so you can do those locally as well. So if you just do OSC build on an ARM repository, it would even run on your x86 machine seamlessly. You wouldn't see that it's running ARM. It looks as if it was running x86 code. Well, with that, off to questions. I got a mic here. Do we have to turn this on?
Yeah.
There are three buttons on this thing.
No.
All right, we have a non-working microphone. Then I would assume I would just repeat questions once they get asked. Who got questions? So the question is if it's possible to build non-OpenSUSE packages against ARM. In theory, yes, but we don't include, we didn't import other distributions into the build service for their ARM builds. So the build service itself, the whole logic is there. If you have your own build service, you can easily do that. But in order to build against other distributions, we have to take their binaries, put them into our build service, and we didn't do that for other ARM distributions. if, okay, are we planning to do that? So far, I don't know of any project to do this, because right now we are really constrained on build power, because you saw all the hardware issues that we had. So today, we didn't even consider it. But I can certainly take it into consideration. What distribution would you be thinking of? Okay, so he's thinking about Debian CentOS. CentOS doesn't exist for ARM. Debian does exist for ARM in two different flavors, similar to the ARMv5, ARMv7 split. They basically have the same thing. They just call it ARMEL and ARMHL, HF, something like that. Yeah, I don't know. You just got to think about it. The question is if the hardware on A9 is incapable of running KVM. A9 does not provide virtualization extensions, and the ARM instruction set is by design not virtualizable. Meaning, if you run kernel code in user space, it behaves differently. There are only two instructions or so, or two different places where it does behave differently. So you can work around that limitation by para-virtualizing your guest kernel, which a proof of concept port actually did. That was what Andre was referring to. But I wouldn't consider that a stable base to work on. It's really just more of a toy project. And it has no future, exactly. Because, well, there are already devices out there that do have virtualization extensions. Every future ARM device, every future ARM revision will have virtualization extensions. Even the really low power ones, A7s, even those have virtualization extensions. There's no point in caring about this, really. Right, well.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex, for your talk. Very interesting talk. And good luck for the future there.
The comedian is with us.